Chapter 5. Joshua Valiente and indeed Sister Agnes were never far from the thoughts of Sister John, superior of the home on Madison West 5, or her companions. Take the case of Jan Roderick, who both Agnes and Joshua had met. 10 years old, Jan was a conundrum to the sisters and staff, even a source of frustration at times, so complicated was the knotted-up personality contained within that small body. Sister John could do nothing but advise patience. What use were nuns and counsellors and teachers if they couldn't show patience, at least? Sister John herself had never found it terribly hard to stay calm around Jan. She didn't pride herself on any special qualities of character, however. It was just that Jan, a slim, dark boy, reminded her in so many ways of Joshua. The thing with Joshua was that he had always seemed so mundane. His hobbies as a boy in the home before step day had been solitary trekking and exploring the reconstructed prairie in Madison's Arboretum, and back at the home, making ham radio gear and assembling models, in fact, repairing incomplete or broken models. And that gave you a clue as to the kind of personality Joshua had harboured under that dark mop of hair. Then, after step day, Joshua had become something of a local celebrity for his calm competence that first bewildering night, when the doors of the stepwise worlds had suddenly swung open, and everybody else had freaked, including most adults. Sister John had never forgotten what Joshua had done for her that night. She had had utterly no idea what had happened to her.
"I never stepped into no wardrobe."
Sarah Ann Coates, as she was known then, had already survived nightmares, which was why she had ended up in the home on Allied Drive in the first place. And there, blundering around in a darkened stepwise forest, she had felt as if all those nightmares had come back for her once more. Hands reaching for her in the night. She'd lost it. Joshua had brought her home. He had saved her. Step day had changed his life, but it hadn't changed the essence of Joshua, it seemed to Sister John. He had gone on more solo treks. It was just that now he had jaunted off stepwise to the high megas. He was still methodical and patient to a fault, but now he made and repaired stepper boxes rather than assembly kits and jigsaw puzzles. There was a spooky side to Joshua. He had been the very first widely known natural stepper after all, as if Joshua belonged more to the long earth than the good old datum. But he was a man who was in essence simple, Sister John thought. Not meaning dumb, but simple of construction within, with a shortcut between his own deep moral core and the way he behaved. She tried to make it clear to Joshua that there would always be an open door for him here, whenever he needed it. It had been her idea to set up a memorial stone for Helen Valiente in the rebuilt home's little cemetery plot. It seemed the very least she could do. So if Sister Agnes and the rest had been able to help Joshua Valiente, if he had eventually grown up so straight and true, surely Sister John in turn could help Jan Roderick. But Jan was such a puzzle. One morning, Sister Colleen, not far into her 20s herself, came to Sister John in a fluster.
"That boy will do the oddest things."
"Such as?"
"He listens."
"What's so odd about that?"
"Listens to what?" "Not what. Who? To whoever comes in the door. Officials. Visitors."
"I thought he didn't get visitors," Sister John said.
"He doesn't. I mean visitors for the other kids, or even the sisters. If he gets the chance, he just sits there and listens. And he asks if they've heard any good stories."
"Stories?"
"Travelers' tales, urban myths, that kind of thing."
"Tabloid gossip, virals?" Sister John asked, feeling it was appropriate to try to sound stern.
"Well, maybe. But he seems to like best the stuff he hears direct from people, and he writes it down on that battered old tablet of his. He even adds times and dates and places. It creeps people out if they notice."
"Well,
and then there's the questions. He will ask the oddest things. He's been watching one of Joshua's old movies again.
Ah. Jan's dogged interest in antique pre-step day science fiction had prompted the sisters to curate the home's collection, left behind mainly by Joshua, with a lot more care. Putting battered paperback books in order was one thing, but it had taken a lot of technical expertise before various 100-year-old movies had been successfully converted from tape or disc or creaky old file formats to be playable on modern tablets and screens. And after all that effort, the boy returned again and again to a mere handful of favourites.
Let me guess which one he's watching. The First Men in the Moon? No. Avatar? The Mouse on the Moon? Galaxy Quest? That one.
Ha! Huh.
I knew it.
He started asking questions like he'd never seen the movie before. And you know he's seen it 20 times. What's that place called?
Well, it's a planet. But what's its name? Is it real?
It's just in the movie.
Could you go there for real?
What's really out there in space? Are there people like us there? And so on. Over and over. And you don't dare guess at an answer. Not even about a detail of some dumb old movie. Or you know he'll check it out and come after you.
It's not so strange for a 10-year-old boy to be interested in space.
I know. Sister Colleen sighed. It's just he's so, you know, Jan.
I'll speak to him.
So Sister John quietly arranged to spend an evening with Jan. She promised him they'd sit together on an elderly sofa watching one of his old movies or reading one of his books, whatever he liked. They settled down before a big wall-mounted screen that was showing Contact, a movie she had seen with him so many times she recognized each frame. Jan was making notes on a handheld tablet, and he had a couple of old novels on the couch beside him. One was Contact, the book of the movie, or maybe it was the other way around, and the other was called Ringworld. The two of them sat there viewing philosophically and crunching on popcorn. Right now the screen showed radio astronomer Ellie Arroway as a kid, with her father. Jan remarked,
"You know, this movie is 80 years old, something like that, but they talk just the way people talk now."
What kind of perception was that for a 10-year-old boy? It was the kind of thing Jan came out with that perpetually surprised people.
"I guess so. Why do you think that is?"
He shrugged.
"Because we all watch the same old movies. Nobody makes new stuff anymore."
She supposed that was true.
"I did read that the TV industry suffered after Step Day because you couldn't transmit stuff between the stepwise worlds. Then Yellowstone kind of killed it off for good. You know, the big volcano back in 40.
"So we all watch the same stuff over and over,"
Jan said.
"It's like it froze."
She smiled. "I guess. Nobody's sure who the Pope is anymore, but we all know Captain Kirk."
"I never heard of him."
"You will, Jan. You will. So why do you like this movie particularly?"
"Contact. I like the way she looks for patterns, you know, in the signal from the sky. All those numbers. That's why I wanted to watch this movie, because they really did pick up a signal in the sky, didn't they? At the gap. Did they find numbers in that signal?"
"I don't know," Sister John said honestly.
She hadn't been much interested in the signal when it was briefly news. Most of the reporting she'd seen had been lurid speculation. Jan munched popcorn complacently.
"I found some books in the library about finding patterns in numbers and stuff, patterns in nature, like you get the same kind of spiral in a sunflower and a galaxy."
"Really?" Sister John had never been a scholar. She was reminded sharply of Sister Georgina, long dead now, who had been the most academic of the nuns. The books Jan had consulted might even have been Georgina's once. Georgina had never ceased to remind everybody that she had studied at Cambridge. Sister John murmured,
"Not the one in Massachusetts, Cambridge University, the real one, you know, in England."
Jan looked at her quizzically.
"Huh?"
"Nothing, just remembering."
And she made an intuitive leap.
"Patterns. Is that why you like listening to the stories people tell?" Are there patterns in those too?
He shrugged, chewing his popcorn. Maybe he didn't recognize himself what he was doing, Sister John thought. Pattern-seeking, looking for logic in a chaotic life. Contact, looking for a way to reach the absent other. The movie had made the same connection, actually. There was a slightly cheesy scene where the young Ellie tried to contact her dead father through CB radio. It made sense, given Jan's background. He'd never even met his father, and his mother had been little more than a kid herself, with significant learning and cognitive difficulties. He'd spent his first 4 years more or less alone with the mother in a post-Yellowstone low-earth refugee camp that had become a sink of poverty and dependence. One downside of the great opening up of the Long Earth was that it offered a lot more room for such cases to go unnoticed. The mother had done her limited best, but she hadn't even taught Jan to speak properly. They had communicated with a kind of home-developed baby talk. Then the mother, too, had disappeared. Neighbours had rescued a bewildered and terrified child from starvation. Suddenly, at age 4, Jan Roderick had lost his only human contact and his sole means of communication. Bombarded by a blizzard of strangeness, he hadn't uttered a word for a whole year. Sister John always tried to keep stuff like that in the back of her mind. A kid was a kid, after all, not a bundle of conditions. Yet such knowledge informed.
So what are you making notes about now? I'm proving Ellie Arroway is from Madison, Wisconsin.
She did a double take.
Really? It doesn't say so out loud in the movie, but in the book, in the first chapter, Ellie's mom takes her for a walk down State Street.
He squinted.
There was a State Street in Dayton, Madison, too, wasn't there, sister?
Yes, there was.
And it says she lives by a lake in Wisconsin.
He flicked through his tablet, small fingers moving rapidly.
She goes to see her mother in a care home in Janesville, and look, in the movie...
Expertly, he scrolled back to a scene where a wall map showed young Ellie's pattern of CB radio contacts, lines of tape connecting thumbtacks.
See the tack where her home is?
Dead on for Madison, Sister John said, wondering.
Later, her father says how far away Pensacola is.
I believe you.
Wow. Who'd have thought it? Cheeseheads make first contact. Woohoo!
They exchanged a high-five slap, and Sister John dared to hug him, tickling him a little to make him laugh. He wasn't generally a physical kind of kid. Then they subsided and watched more of the ancient movie. She said carefully,
Sister Colleen says you've been asking questions about why people haven't gone to other worlds for real. I'm sorry, he said reflexively.
For all her caution, she'd got the tone wrong. Too many of the kids in the home were oversensitized to criticism and the punishment that had usually followed before they came here.
No, don't be sorry. It's okay. We're just talking. Look, you know Americans did go to the moon and back? Sure, like 100 years ago. Not since then.
I guess it's because of the long Earth. Why go to the moon when you've got all those worlds you can just walk into?
But they're all boring. They're all just Madison, without the people and stuff.
I know what you mean. But there's a lot of worlds in the long Earth, and you don't need a spacesuit. You can breathe the air. Sister John remembered that Joshua, as a younger man, had said the same kind of thing. Out in the high megas, I am, in fact, a planet-bound astronaut, which hasn't got the glamour of the old-time spaceman, but does have the advantage in that you can stop occasionally for a crap. She suppressed a smile.
Is the Long Earth bigger than the Ring World?
She had to glance at the book cover to get a rough idea of what a Ring World was, some kind of huge structure in space.
Well, how big is the Ring World? As big as 3 million Earths, he said promptly.
Oh, the Long Earth is much bigger than that.
Really?
His eyes widened in wonder.
Cool.
Later, when the spooky stuff began, she would think back to conversations like this. It was a strange thing that Jan Roderick's background had almost pre-adapted him for what followed, made him ready to respond to the invitation. The thing was, Jan Roderick had been right. Obsessed with SETI and mathematical puzzles and pattern finding, he was slowly becoming aware of something new in the world, new and real. A pattern not of numbers or contained in radio signals whispered from the sky. A pattern in the stories people were telling each other. Stories spreading across local nets in the low earths and webs of telegraph and telephone cables and micro-comsats in the more developed pioneer worlds. And further out through the outer net, the low-tech, self-organized communication system that spanned a million worlds of the long earth, even when push came to shove, spreading by word of mouth around campfires scattered across otherwise empty planets where travelers met and talked. And, coincidentally, given Joshua's departing conversation with Agnes, which was the first time he had thought of his old friend Monica Jansen for some time, one such story concerned a strange encounter for Jansen herself, many years earlier.